You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
Welcome back to a very different part four than we thought we'd have. I guess that's how it goes when it comes to these cases, right? When you follow the evidence wherever it leads, sometimes what it uncovers, or doesn't, may surprise you. Trial by jury is now behind us, and if you're listening to this, hopefully you've made your own conclusions about what was presented during that part of the series. Does it compel you? Are you convinced? Maybe we were able to present enough of a case to make you want to consider the fact that the man known as the Zodiac wasn't one man at all. But now we're leaving San Francisco, off to other cases. But we couldn't leave without giving you our final thoughts on what we took from trial and discussing the toll that we deal with in creating this show for you, our audience. Sometimes you just have to roll with it. It's not without its risk, and as you'll soon discover, it's not without fallout.
Search goes on in San Francisco for the man known as the Zodiac Killer.
School children are nice targets. I shall wipe out a school bus some morning, shoot out the tires, and then pick off the kiddies as they come bounding out.
Today, Riverside police are still investigating Bates' murder, but are not connecting it to the Zodiac Killer.
In most murder cases, you'll find a motive. But of course, this guy is just a killer, a mad killer, and you have no motive.
At the beginning, I did think I was going to die.
I've had 11 years patrolling this lake, and I've seen a lot of people cut up by boat accidents and this, but this is one of the worst things I ever witnessed, for no reason at all. Just a hooded man came up with a pistol drawn on him, tied him up, and then told him he had to kill him.
Last December, a team of amateur code breakers was able to crash the so-called 340 cipher, the code which was mailed to the San Francisco Chronicle back in 1969. It was finally revealed. It said, quote, "I hope you're having lots of fun in trying to catch me." The department cannot comment because, as far as they're concerned, the case is still ongoing.
Well, it's been an interesting 2 weeks. The fallout from the episode and part three and trial by jury. And here we are back. Jennifer Taylor, Chris Williamson, welcome back to Vanished. We're going to talk a little bit tonight about trial by jury. We're going to talk a little bit about the case that I, alongside Drew Beeson, tried to make for the two-in-one idea and for Don Chaney as Zodiac. And we'll get, of course, your thoughts on now in retrospect, what you think of what we were able to put forth, or maybe the lack of information we're able to put forth. We'll get into it. How are you feeling tonight? I mean, 2 weeks removed from part three, we're wrapping up Zodiac finally.
I have to be honest, I'm happy to move on to the next case. You know, I'm not it's one of those really, really complicated ones that we were never going to have enough time to cover everything that I wanted to cover. Mm-hmm. I think we did the best with the time that we had. I know we had some complaints that we didn't get into the letters as much as people wanted us to get into. The problem with that, though, is if you're going to focus an entire, you know, four episodes or three or however many we ended up doing, mm-hmm, on just trying to focus on who the Zodiac Killer is, and then also try to focus on other crimes that may not have been attributed to him. Like, well, that's already enough content. Mm-hmm. That's already so much. And the problem with the letters is that before you can talk about the letters and what they say about who the Zodiac Killer is, first you have to establish that the letters were written by the Zodiac Killer. And I'm not saying that they aren't by any means. It's just, they would have taken so much other time. We did try to touch on them, mm-hmm, but we just weren't able. And that's the problem with big cases like this, is that we could have done a whole season just on this, and we just couldn't do everything we wanted to do, unfortunately.
The season must go on. We can't spend that much time on one case, even though sometimes we really want to. Sometimes we can't get out of a case fast enough. This was, I'll be honest, a tough one to cover. It felt like a very big hill to climb.
It was just so much. There's just so much out there.
There really is. And adding in the non-canonical factor just explodes it, dials it up to 11, because as you just mentioned, there's so much more information that you obviously have to look at if you consider those incidents as Zodiac incidents or not. I do want to ask you, it's been 2 weeks. We'll get into as much as we are able to or feel comfortable to tonight, but what did you ultimately think about the case as we made it for 2-for-1 for Don Cheney? Does Drew have compelling points? What didn't work for you? I mean, let's talk about it.
I think it's an interesting theory, and I certainly don't have anything that disproves the theory. I think it's certainly possible. And I think certainly with as many people that think Arthur Lee Allen is guilty, I think if you're going to buy that, you certainly should consider whether Don Cheney was involved. I don't think it's an unreasonable theory at all. I think the thing that I struggle with most about it, though, is that he wasn't living in the area.
Yeah.
I know that not everybody has the same concerns as I do, and that's fine. But I do tend to think that it makes it less likely that he was involved when he was living as far away as he was. I mean, not just to commit the actual murders, but all of the letters. I know we just talked about how we really weren't able to get into those. But all of the letters were postmarked from San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so whatever theory you come up with has to explain how he was able, not even necessarily how he was able to do it, because I'm sure that he would have figured out a way to do it. But why? Why do that? Does that mean he didn't do it? No, of course not.
Yeah.
But that is kind of the one thing that I get hung up on is, like, if you wanted to do this, why are you leaving in the first place? Your accomplice, who you're trying to control, is 400 miles away. Certainly makes it much more difficult to control that person. Keep an eye on them. Make sure that they're not going to do something stupid. Turn you into the police. Yeah, something like that.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, that's the biggest thing that kind of gives me doubt. But could it be possible? Certainly. I don't think it's an unreasonable theory at all.
Obviously, for people who are listening to the show, they know that we haven't talked since part one. We've talked certainly off the record and sort of chatted with each other, you know, as we're sort of interviewing folks and going through the process. But we haven't really talked at length about the case. And I think that's purposefully done because we wanted to sort of have this conversation post-trial tonight and really sort of get into a couple of things that we sort of presented. What I wanted to ask you, though, is the overall idea of there being more than one person or this being a persona, separating the fact of who that persona was or who made up that persona specifically. Do you think that's a legitimate idea? I mean, I was kind of surprised at how many serial killers have accomplices, you know, to your point talking about. I was surprised about some of the things that we learned just to show my ignorance to some of these types of cases. Is it compelling that it's 2-in-1 or is it just in general, no matter who it is? Is it compelling that this is a persona and not just a guy?
I'm not surprised at all to hear that more serial killers have accomplices. Because here's the thing. I tend to think that, and this is not just me like speculating, you see it when the police catch a serial killer, they tend to just like stop looking. You know, I'm not a serial killer expert by any stretch of the imagination. And I know that I tend to kind of go back to Bob Mata's show, but there's a really good reason why we had him on. And that is because he does have experience with the stuff, and his show is a really good deep dive in, for example, John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah.
And if you follow his show, if you listen to his first season, what becomes really apparent in that case is once the police found all of the bodies in his crawl space, they were not really interested in investigating anymore. They're not interested in finding other victims, for example. They're not interested. They have their guy. I think the first time I really was confronted with this, it's like, why wouldn't you want to solve all of these other crimes? Like, why wouldn't you want to put all of the bad guys away? But really, there's nothing but drama and bad press, and like, there's really no good reason. There's a lot of incentive, is what I'm trying to say, for the authorities in a particular place, in a particular city, to not want to keep looking. And so I think what happens then is you tend to see serial killer type crimes as like solo crimes. And the fact that like there's a lot of people that believe that Gacy was working with lots of people, that people knew about what he was doing, helping him cover it up, sending him victims. I mean, that kind of thing is not going to be something that's going to be investigated. And I know I'm getting into like real conspiracy theory stuff here, but like it's not something that's popularized. It's not what's in the movies. And so, but that doesn't mean that that's not what's happening. And I think that there is still so much about this phenomenon of multiple homicides that we don't understand because it's really not getting enough attention. Weirdly, that's a weird thing to say because so many people love to cover serial killer stories, but like I really don't think we know as much about it. And I know I mentioned this with Bob Mata when we talked, but there is, and I looked it up after I had that conversation with him where I was like, I'm pretty sure Ted Bundy said something something about there's more of us than you realize. And I was right. That was him
that
said that. I went and looked it up and he did. And it was in some interview. And he's just like, we are your sons. We are your husbands. You would be surprised. You know, and I believe that.
He's not wrong.
So to answer your question, am I surprised? Could it be that there's more than one person involved? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. I think that could be a thing.
You know, if we're trying to prove anything definitively, it's that it's very possible that this could have been more than one person.
Definitively, it is possible. I love that phrase. Definitively.
Right.
Possibly.
Right. I figured you'd like that. I figured you'd like that. As we always do on this show, I bring sort of these really, what I think are compelling ideas, compelling enough to want to investigate them for various cases. And I feel like we, you know, we really try to put the best foot forward when it comes to Cheney. I really, the angle that, you know, Drabeason discusses, looking at why Cheney would want to insert himself into the case to begin with, I really like that angle. I feel like it goes with what we know from a popular culture standpoint of who Zodiac was and what we've sort of made this case, for better or for worse, in the pop culture sphere. For me, it was really compelling to sort of hear him talk about, you know, that aspect of the case. And it just kind of struck me. And I thought, well, you know, that's interesting. And I thought, when you combine that with all these incidents that are going on in Southern California, you know, 6 to 8 years before, that was enough to push it over the top to, like, let's look at this a little more aggressively. And I hope that we were able to, you know, convince some of our listeners to go out and take a closer look at that theory and see if it, you know, does it hold weight or not. What are your thoughts now, looking back on it in retrospect? You made a really great, I thought, closing statement that drilled home a lot of your points, and not everybody was happy with that, but I stand by it 1,000%. Tell me what you think about it now, looking back on it. Did you go too hard? What do you think about that? I mean, just maybe in general on the case. Do you go too hard on these cases? Do you go too hard on some of our guests?
Well, I don't try to. I mean, I hope not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know how to answer that question. Yeah. I mean, I kind of gave you my thoughts on what I think that my biggest problems are with the theory. Am I convinced? No, but I'm one person. Mm-hmm. So...
Right.
You know, I think at the end of the day, it was, I'm still happy with the theory that we chose to try to quote unquote put on trial.
Yeah.
Because as far as I know, it's not a theory that's gotten a lot of media attention. I know that Drabeason has his own books and YouTube channel, but I was happy to be able to give him another platform to talk about it so that hopefully more people can learn about that theory.
Absolutely.
That's always what our show is to kind of pick something that is hotly debated and put the pros and cons out there through our trial by jury format. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always going to pick a position and stick to it and advocate for it. That's always what I'm going to do. I'm always trying to get better at doing that. And I'm always trying to make sure that we're putting the idea and the theory on trial rather than the actual person who's on that's presenting the theory. But, you know, do I go too hard? I don't know. Kind of a bitch sometimes, but I don't mean to be.
Well, let me just say this. I didn't think you'd go there, but let me just tell you this.
Just why you don't have to put this. You can edit this out. In actual court, I'm a huge bitch. So I actually think I'm very nice on the show.
Oh, it's staying in. It's staying in. I'll tell you, and you know what? It's funny that you mentioned that, because I've said this off the record. I've said this on, like, when I've done other media spots and stuff on shows too, and we may be getting off on a little tangent, but, you know, there's been a lot of interesting information that's sort of unfolded in the wake of trial by jury. The show is kind of, it's become difficult to guest on in certain circumstances, because we are going to scrutinize your work. We're going to scrutinize to a degree, you know, obviously your theory, your suspects, whatever you're putting on, you know, on the show for us to sort of drill down into. And it can be a difficult show sometimes for people that maybe don't have the ability to back up some of the stuff that they're talking about, or maybe there's a lack of evidence or something. And I think that's just, it's organically going to come out on the show. We sort of have this history now of sort of, you know, if you can be strong on the show, and if you can sort of withstand some of, you know, of the skepticism and some of the microscope, you know, then I think ultimately you come out stronger. It's better for you as somebody who's working a given theory or whatever. But I tell people all the time, she could probably go harder. She could probably twist it harder, and she's not.
Oh, yeah, no, I could. I do like... our guests.
Yes.
I do like them as people. Not that I don't like opposing counsel at work. Like, that's not what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm just saying that that's my job.
Right.
You know, and this is something I do for fun. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not trying to take it that seriously the same way I take my clients' real lives seriously. I'm passionate about what I do. You know, like, I've done a lot of different types of law. I care a lot about my clients. And so I can absolutely be a fierce advocate. I don't take this podcast very, like, it's not that I don't take it seriously.
Right. No, I understand what you mean.
It's not that serious.
Right. At the end of the day, it's a show that we want to get ears on it. You know, we want people to tune into the show. We want the show to generate some buzz and the way that we
want to encourage people to guest.
Yeah. You know? No, right. No, don't let this scare you away, please. Future guests. I mean, I feel like I love our show. I love what we do, but it's a difficult show. I acknowledge, you know, openly that it can be a difficult show to guest on if you don't bring, you know, everything you've got, you know, to the show, because I think it'll organically come out, because you're going to ask questions that are just logistical questions. During editing, I'm listening to you sort of ratchet up these questions and hit Drew with 6 or 7 questions in a row, kind of setting them up for, like, you know, the explanation of, like, how it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, or how it's hard to believe that Cheney could have driven, you know, that far and could have gone out of his way. Like, you make a really good, strong, you know, argument for that. People have to be ready for those arguments to be made and to be able to refute them, you know, in a compelling way. And people can do that. People have done that on the show, and it shows fantastically through when they do, I think.
Yeah.
But it also shows fantastically through when they don't. And it can be a tough show to guest on because of that. You know, it can hurt a reputation, not because we're trying to, but because whatever your holes are, we're going to hammer on them. You know, that's just what we do.
Our format is, it is confrontational on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is what cross-examination is. That is literally what they call it in the Constitution. You have a right to confront witnesses against you. Again, this is not that serious, but that is why cross-examination is what it is because it's supposed to be a format for you to force somebody to answer questions that they might not want to answer. Mm-hmm. And of course, in a real trial, you're talking about people that are accusing you of a crime, or people that are accusing you of negligence, or whatever your lawsuit or criminal trial happens to be about.
Yeah.
But, you know, we thought it was a good way to kind of put some people's theories to the test. Not the person themselves, of course, but the theory. There's a lot of different things that go into it. For some people, it's just a nerve-wracking, like, they don't want to have to. And I get it. Like, it can be nerve-wracking to have to, like you have no idea what you're going to be asked, you know. By the way, if you're ever thinking about guesting on this show, I have never, ever, ever told somebody, if you need to stop and look up an answer to a question, like, I always let you do that. Like, I'm not trying to trick anybody,
right.
But I'm also not giving any of our guests questions ahead of time, because while I'm perfectly fine with somebody needing to take additional time if they need to look up a fact or look up, you know,
just verify something they're saying, something specific,
I'm certainly not about to give you lead time to try to, like, maneuver your way around questions you know I'm gonna ask. I think that we've always tried really, really hard to be respectful with all of our guests. And there have absolutely been guests that have come on that have been really good sports about it and have had a lot of fun. But you do kind of have to have thick skin, especially because you know that not only am I going to ask you tough questions, but we end every show with our closing arguments, which is both you and I giving it our best final, like, this is why you should believe or not believe this.
Yeah.
So it does have to be something that you're willing to go into and not take it personally.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, on that note, we are going to be going to some really interesting spaces and investigating some interesting cases for season 3. We still have a ton, what seems like an insurmountable mountain of information that we're going to be covering. Just so folks know, we're going to go back to aviation. We're going to discuss the story of an aviator not named Amelia Earhart, Amy Johnson, who is a really spectacular woman in her own right, and a very interesting final set of days, you know, depending on who you talk to. And we're gonna go into that, and it's a really fun case, and we have a really cool way of organically returning to Earhart. Memorial Day, we're gonna return to Earhart. We're gonna release our first Earhart centric episode for the show since we stopped recording for Vanished Amelia Earhart. I don't know how long ago that was now. It's been a while, probably a couple of years, right?
We did your book launch episode. I don't know if that made it onto the main feed, but we did a live show when you launched your book.
We did do a live show.
show. As guests.
Yeah, that was just a YouTube live thing. Like, I have it, obviously, but it was a YouTube live thing. We've never released it on the show.
Oh, did it not make it onto this feed? Oh.
According to listeners of this feed that maybe didn't catch that book launch release, which was a lot of fun, this is our first real sort of visit back to the Earhart case since we left it, where we left it. And so I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to Jesse James. We got Jimmy Hoffa coming this year.
Because we don't learn our lessons, apparently.
We don't.
Take these big cases.
Yeah.
And I don't know, what's interesting about this one is I don't know yet what angle you're hoping to kind of take and cover on Jesse James. So
no,
I just
don't.
Am kind of learning generally what I can about.
Yes, well.
But I haven't learned yet what crazy theory you're going to bring to me.
Let me just tell you, I'll give everybody a little tease for Jesse James, that the theory we're going to bring forward for Jesse James actually connects him to another story that we covered on the show, and another figure. You want to guess who, potentially?
I don't have to guess.
You know, right?
I don't know if you can see. I have nothing but John Wilkes Booth memorabilia in this room that I'm recording in. So if you try to come at me with incorrect John Wilkes Booth facts, I have my secret weapon.
Absolutely.
All I have to do is get on my own podcast and start saying incorrect facts about all of the things he's an expert on, and it will take 5 seconds. He will be in front of this mic to correct me, and that's how you get Dave Taylor to make a podcast. If you're going to come at me with weird John Wilkes Booth facts, you better be ready, because I've got Dave Taylor.
Look, I will tell you that if you think what we talked about during the Booth series was crazy, then strap in. It's going to get really wild.
Oh, God. You are going to make his literal head explode.
Having said all that, with what's coming forward in the rest of season 3, final thoughts on Zodiac as we exit San Francisco, the West Coast, and this mind-bending story that we've been immersed in for the last several months.
I guess final thoughts are, I still remain very, very hopeful and very, very optimistic that the case will get solved. I think that there's enough interest there for people to not forget about it. I think that the technology is there. It's probably going to take a lot of effort, and it's certainly going to take a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of those cases that I think, despite a seeming lack of physical evidence, I do think it's solvable.
Mm-hmm.
I know we talked about some of the potential problems with, is the DNA actually the Zodiac's DNA? Are the fingerprints actually the Zodiac's fingerprints? And I know a lot of the potential to be solved is dependent on how evidence has been stored over the years,
yeah,
which we all know is not always great.
Mm-hmm.
But all it takes is one tiny piece of evidence that has usable DNA on it. I choose to remain hopeful that it will get solved. The Golden State Killer case gives me hope that if we can solve that one, we can solve this one too. And so that's what I will leave this case on, is obviously we weren't able to solve it because, you know, we're two podcasters. But I do think it's a solvable case. That's the one thing I took away from everything I've learned.
All right. So that's it. Zodiac is behind us. I continue to wonder how it is that this show covers serial killer cases, but as we've said throughout this series, we just can't seem to avoid them. You think there's something to that? At any rate, Season 3 continues as we leave the United States and head back overseas to Oxford to tell you the story of a woman whose name you've likely never heard of until now. On January the 5th, 1941, 2 years to the day that Amelia Earhart was declared dead in absentia, her friend and fellow pioneering aviatrix Amy Johnson disappeared over the Thames Estuary in the southeast of Great Britain. History says she became disoriented and simply lost her way and eventually ran out of fuel. Sound familiar? What really happened, though, may just be a story that you'll have to hear to believe. Off to merry old England. See you next time. This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to this episode of Vanished. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media, where we post each episode as it airs, news, show information, and group discussion. Go to facebook.com/vanishpod. On social media, search the handle @vanishpod. Reviews are crucial to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please head to Apple Podcasts to rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Your co-hosts for Vanished are Jennifer Taylor and Chris Williamson. This show is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by me, Chris Williamson, with music by Dane Jarrus Schmidt. The opinions on Vanished are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Madhouse Incorporated. Madhouse Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of historical entertainment and education, and no infringement is ever intended. Vanished is an exclusive trademark of Madhouse Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Madhouse Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Vanished is a Madhouse Films production, copyright 2023. All rights reserved.